Hi, I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. Now, here in The Exchange, as you know, we're not afraid of complicated issues or strong opinions or debates. In fact, we jump into these conversations because we know they help you learn. And we know that you're open to hearing something that might challenge your own beliefs. But guess what? These conversations happen here thanks to the financial support of listeners like you. So contribute now to support radio that doesn't shy away from the hard stuff, the difficult topics. It's easy to do at nhpr.org or follow the link right there in the show notes. And thank you.
Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. For avid readers, summer is often the only time when you can really tackle that stack of books by your bed. But if you're less than excited by what's in that pile, or you don't have a bedside stack, stick with us, because today in The Exchange, it's our annual summer book show. We'll hear about the latest in fiction, nonfiction, humor, poetry, memoir, even some self-improvement. And all the books mentioned this hour by our guests and by you will be put on our website later today. It's nhpr.org/exchange. So right now, though, tell us what's on your summer reading list or get some advice from our guests. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Or find us on Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. And our guests are Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. Michael, a big welcome back. Happy summer.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. And Dan, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
It's good to see you, Laura. Thanks for having me in.
Well, I'll start with you, Michael. Here we are, early summer. It's beautiful. What are patrons in the mood for right now?
They just want books. You know, it's fascinating to watch people come in. They'll just pile up books and bring them up to the counter and say, this is my summer reading. But then you might see them 2 weeks later.
Really?
Because they plowed through the books they read. It's a fun time for us to reconnect with readers and have them see what's new and what's good.
And it was kind of a long, cold, dreary spring, and so I don't know about your patrons, but I'm ready to just read something fun.
There's some pent-up demand out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure.
Michael used the word reconnect, and that's the key word, especially in independent bookstores now across this country. They not only want the books, but they want the books in community, and that's what we're seeing in our stores. These independent bookstores on main streets across America are connecting not just people with books, but people with other people who love books. So that's what we see that people want now.
Absolutely true. I mean, certainly there are other options for being able to acquire books like any other merchandise. But books are, you know, they're about human stories. They're about human connection. And having a bookstore as a community center in your town is a resource that is just fantastic.
Well, as always, we will have Dan and Michael's favorites for the summer on our website, nhpr.org/exchange, as well as any book that comes up in our conversation. And I always like to compare your lists, you know, to see where the overlap is, see where there's no overlap. And there's no overlap at all, guys, this year on the nonfiction list. So let's start. Dan has 10, Michael has 8. Let's talk about your favorites and start with two authors, guys, who will be very familiar to our listeners. And Michael, David Sedaris, he's got a new one.
He does. And, you know, I mean, a lot of us have been following David Sedaris's career, both as a writer and as a teller of stories, for years and years and years. And he's unfailingly funny, engaging, just tells stories like nobody else can. It's hard to understand how he does it. You just watch him doing it and you marvel at it. This time in his book Calypso, it's a little different. I mean, the essays, they're all individually hilarious. You laugh out loud at various moments, but they're also a little darker, a little more profound, and they're interconnected. I mean, what it really is the story of David Sedaris's family. His aging father, his mom who died too early and was an alcoholic, his sister who died tragically, a suicide, and there's mental illness involved. And it's, you know, and these different chapters, you don't even notice it while it's happening until towards the end. There's such an accretion of detail, that themes that recur over and over again, that all of a sudden you understand you're reading really a classic work, a classic memoir, in addition to a collection of really, really funny essays. So it's Calypso. I can't say enough about this book.
Have you read it? Yeah.
Yes, I did. Mm. Thank you for asking. Don't ask me that question on the air, Laura. But yes, I did. I did read that book, and I loved it.
Mm. Another author who is familiar and beloved by a lot of our listeners, Dan, is Michael Pollan. He's got something, How to Change Your Mind. Wow, sounds like self-help.
Yeah, Michael Pollan is kind of the heir to John McPhee, and that anything he writes is pretty much something I want to read, even if it's just his grocery list. He has a new book called How to Change Your Mind, and it's a very unique and personal take on the effort over the last few years to reclaim some of the heritage of the experiments with LSD that came to fruition in the 60s, and then was basically everything was kind of shoveled under the rug.
Wait, Michael Pollan is telling you to take LSD?
He is talking about his experiences taking these mind-altering drugs, and it's a meditation on consciousness. And so it's fascinating reading, and Mark DeCarteret, who works in our store, is recommending this book, and it's on the independent bookseller's bestseller list for nonfiction.
Yeah, I saw that around on a lot of lists.
This is the Michael Pollan that wrote about food over the last few books, but it's also written about agronomy, and he's one of those writers like John McPhee who takes on a variety of subjects, but everything he writes is interesting.
Other nonfiction, Michael, that you love?
Well, it's just out in paperback. Roxane Gay, who should be a name that's familiar to a lot of your listeners, has just published her memoir in paperback. It's called Hunger, A Memoir of My Body. And she's also the author of Bad Feminist. She's one of the most honest writers working today. This is really the story of what it's like to live in her body in our culture. And while it's her story, it's also the story of our culture. It's a great read, and it just came out in paperback this week, so I thought I'd grab it because, when people want to go to the beach, you don't always want to bring a hardcover and mix it with sunscreen and sand. sometimes a paperback fits better into the backpack. So, and it's a very serious read, so you'll impress everybody on the beach.
People be like, wow, look at that guy.
Yeah, intellectual over there.
No Danielle Steele over on that towel. How about you? What other nonfiction do you like?
I just want to affirm that the Roxane Gay is book, Hunger, is wonderful. She actually attended Phillips Exeter Academy in Exeter, and there is a section in there where she talks about her experience at PEA. So that is a wonderful book, and it also has a local connection for us. Two books that I love that are just out. One came out late winter, and the other came out just this past week. Rising by Elizabeth Rush is subtitled Dispatches from the New American Shore, and it's very personal, almost a memoir look at like all these communities that are dealing with the rising of the ocean level along both the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States. The writing is gorgeous. Stephanie, who is our store manager, she wrote that this book is equal parts gorgeous and terrifying. It's a travelogue, a memoir, and most of all, an incredibly powerful piece of journalism about the eroding effects of climate change on our coastlines and coastal communities. Reading it felt like looking over Rush's shoulder as she traveled to each devastated coastline location. And just discovering again and again these subtle but very profound impacts of the rise of ocean level on these communities that have been built along the coasts of our country.
Okay.
So that one is the writing is beautiful, and the subject matter is creepingly terrifying, but it's just a book that we can't recommend highly enough.
So after that, you need to read David Sedaris to kind of, pick yourself up a little bit. Some weighty topics in nonfiction, though.
Yeah, the other one that I've read and I loved is Tara Westover has written a book called Educated, a Memoir. And she was raised in Idaho. Her father was a survivalist, didn't believe in medical care, didn't believe in education for his children. She followed in the footsteps of an older brother who self-educated himself and was admitted into the university system in this country. And then she saw his example, and she took the ACT after sort of self-educating herself, went to Brigham Young University, then went to Harvard, then went to Cambridge University. And she's writing this amazingly personal and very impactful memoir about what it means to get out of a situation like that where the horizon is so low, but then also how that leaves you feeling disoriented and cut off from your roots.
Wow, that's really interesting. I can't imagine growing up as a survivalist, as you say, and then ending up at Harvard.
Yeah, it's just an amazing story, and it's one of our best-selling nonfiction books this spring.
Other nonfiction, Michael.
Yeah, I just want to say about Educated. It's really a perennial. It's continuing to sell longer than I actually thought it would. It came out some months ago, and it's still doing very well. I think getting back to what Dan was talking about, Rising, I think people are a little tired of reading directly about politics. They get so much of that. It's just saturating the airwaves, and it's hard to avoid. So instead, they'll read about important topics.
Sort of like doing a deep dive into a topic.
Yeah, sea level rise. So you avoid the noise of the day-to-day news, and you're getting into the topics. There's a memoir called The Line Becomes a River by Francisco Cantu that came out some months ago. He was a border patrol agent, and this is the topic of immigration. But instead of getting it into, the usual argument about immigration, pro and con, and, you know, all the rest of this noise, he writes a memoir about what it's like to be a border agent who comes from a Hispanic background, who cares about his job and does a great job at it, but also cares about the people that get caught up in the system. And so, I guess in some ways, if you emphasize empathy, you're already kind of picking a side in this conversation. But I thought it was a great book. And actually, it's funny, when it came out over the winter, I think in February, there were some protests in California stores because this guy was a Border Patrol agent who wrote a memoir. And so people came out, they were protesting it. And instead of, taking sides and having the usual, hair pulling match or whatever, he respectfully listened to the protesters, let them have their say, then continued on with his event and engaged with people. And it was unusual. It really should be a model for political discourse in this country where, people are exercising their First Amendment rights. People are having their voices heard. Stories are getting told. And I was actually proud of our profession, independent bookstores, during that whole thing, because we stood up for free expression, but we also let people have their say.
The number again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Yep, it's that time of year, our annual summer book show. Tell us what's on your reading list for the summer, or if you need some advice, we've definitely got some for you. Our guests are here with their picks, so join us. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And again, any book mentioned on our show today will be on our website later on, nhpr.org/exchange. I also want to let you all know that we're not talking today about books for teens and kids because we have a whole show devoted to that topic that I'm really excited about coming up in early July. So you can send us emails about that now, and we'll use them in our young adult kids reading program coming up in just a couple weeks. Again, the email is exchange@nhpr.org. Couple more nonfictions that I want to plow through with you guys and then get to my favorite genre, and that's nonfiction for sure. Michael, you had on your list two books that were featured on The Exchange. I'm proud to say 90% Mental by Bob Tewksbury, a famous name in baseball locally and nationally, and Where You'll Find Me by Ty Gagne.
Yeah, well, let me start with Tewks because he might be listening. But anyway, 90% Mental is, Bob Tewksbury was a great pitcher, and he became a great mental skills coach after his career as a pitcher ended. And he's been on a variety of teams, most interest to local folks, I guess, the Red Sox. Now he's out on the West Coast. But this is about, it's sort of the hidden game of baseball and about imagining success and talking to these kids who are like multimillionaires but still kids who might be having a hard time gearing themselves up for 162 games a year. And in so doing, I mean, I think Bob writes a book that we can all read and identify with about mental skills and imagining success and toughness. And he also spends a lot of time getting into the head of John Lester, which I think is an exploration that that should have been in a book before now. What do you think, Dan?
Johnny, we hardly knew you.
Okay, so John Lester, not a sports person. I don't know who that is.
He pitched for the Red Sox, and then he went to the Cubs and helped them win their first championship over
his,
a century.
His career has been a real adventure and, just...
And very up and down.
Yeah.
Where You'll Find Me by Ty Gagne. Now, Ty was on our show. I read that book, and at first when I approached it, I thought, oh, it's about a sad story. This Kate Matrosova... very experienced climber in the prime of her fitness, died on Mount Washington. I think it was February of 2015. And it's about a lot more than just this one very sad thing. Again, I approached it thinking, oh, this is kind of a downer, but it's a very good book.
It's also about a couple of different cultures. One is just the culture of New Hampshire, which is, so geared to the mountains. It's just sort of the soul of New Hampshire. And the other culture is just mountaineering worldwide, because this young woman was she was not just a tourist who got lost in the woods. She was the tops of her profession, and she got in trouble anyway, despite all the preparation she did. You know, the winter months are brutal and unforgiving.
Yeah.
And this is the story of that. When we had an event at the bookstore for this at Gibson's, we had 250 people squeezed into our events area. I probably shouldn't say that on the air because the fire marshal might want to have a word. But they were moving around. I just want to point out. But anyway, there's intense interest in this kind of story, and it's a well-told story. It's called Where You'll Find Me, Ty Gagne.
Well, and Dan, you had a nonfiction book that caught my attention, Lexington and Concord, The Battle Heard Round the World, and I thought, okay, well, I love to read about history, but this is pretty well-trod historical territory. So what does the author bring to this topic that's new?
Oh, that's a great question, Laura. George Dawn has written three or four books on the early kind of formation of the U.S. Navy during the Revolutionary War and the War of 1812. And now he's taking on this very, as you say, well-trod path by many authors of what happened at Lexington and Concord. And he has this, to put it very succinctly, he has the theory that the reason that the colonists responded the way they did with such vigor and force is they were afraid that they were about to become serfs in a semi-feudal state, similar to what the English system was at that time, the political system. And they fought like hell not to end up in that situation. So it was basically the free people of America refusing to become serfs in a semi-feudal copy of England's political system. And that's a fairly innovative theory about what happened in the American Revolution in New England at the beginning.
So it's sort of a fresher take on the psychology of people. It wasn't just that they were mad about taxes, although some people say people were just mad about taxes.
Well, the
and
taxes
that's why.
Were, the, I think what the
They're
colonists
part of the
saw,
system. That's
they
true.
Saw that the taxes right. would lead to them becoming semi-feudal.
I see.
And there, the standard of living, actually, in the colonies leading up to the Revolution was extremely high compared to Europe.
Sure.
And they understood that. They had fled that system and came here, their ancestors.
And were able to create wealth, and they wanted to hang on to it.
They were damned if they were going to give it up.
Any other nonfiction, gentlemen, before we hit the break and turn the corner to fiction?
Laura, one thing I want to say is for 30 years, I've been looking to duplicate the experience of reading Barbarians at the Gate, which was a true Wall Street story, a business story in the United States involving the takeover of RJR Nabisco in the 80s. And it was just an adventure story. It read like a Tom Wolfe novel. I've been looking for that, to replicate that experience ever since. And I'm not sure Bad Blood by John Carreyrou quite gets there, but it's an excellent read. It's a scandalous business story. This book was developed out of a series of articles, investigative reporting he did for the Wall Street Journal. It's about secrets and lies in a Silicon Valley startup involving blood testing and apparently faked data, all kinds of scandal, cults of personality, Oh,
yeah. It does sound like
it's a the
thriller.
It's the whole package. It's got a lot going on.
This book has actually gotten some not the book, but the subject has gotten quite a bit of press. So to have a book written up on this is wonderful.
Right, because there's a lot of scrutiny now on the role of, some of these Silicon Valley giants and, the role they play in our lives and our politics and so forth.
This was a startup, and the SEC has charged them now.
All right. More after a short break. We'll talk about fiction, memoir, and of course, more on New Hampshire authors. Stay with us. It's our summer book show on The Exchange.
Did you know a tiny piece of moon rock is embedded in stained glass at the Washington National Cathedral? Or that you can visit a 400-year-old bonsai tree at the National Arboretum? Washington, D.C. is brimming with incredible sights and historic monuments, and you and a friend could be on your way. Simply make a gift to NHPR today to support the news you trust and the programs you love, and you'll be automatically entered to win. But don't wait. We're giving away this trip on Saturday. Give now at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's our annual summer book show. So tell us what's on your reading list for the summer. Or if you need some advice, our guests are here with their picks. We're also putting their book lists on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And in fact, any book that comes up in our conversation today, mentioned by them or me or you, will be put on that list a little bit later today. Again, check it out, nhpr.org/exchange. You can give us a call right now, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our guests are Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter, and Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. And gentlemen, let's go to our listeners, and April's calling in from Hollis. Hi, April. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey. Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I just started reading Zora Neale Hurston's book, Barracoon, and it is a fascinating read. And I'm wondering if your guests have written it or how it's selling in their bookstores.
Okay, April, thank you for calling in. Michael?
Yeah, it's selling very, very briskly. You know, it's a book that was tied up for decades in copyright limbo. Everybody was aware of its existence, but nobody was talking about it. It just couldn't get released. And now finally, it has been. And I haven't had a chance to read it yet. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, April, thank you for the call. Again, you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. So fiction, gentlemen, as I said earlier, on your lists for summer 2018, there was no overlap for nonfiction, which is fun. Gives us more books to talk about. Fiction, on the other hand, you guys had a couple titles that you both liked. And Dan, I want to ask you about one that jumped out at me, Florida by Lauren Groff. From the description, it sounds kind of like Carl Hiaasen. You know, in Florida, there's all sorts of big snakes and crazy people, and watch out for panthers.
Actually, this is a book by Lauren Groff, who had a huge hit with Fates and Furies a few years ago.
I remember that title, yeah.
Right. It was actually one of President Obama's favorite books that year. But this is a collection of short stories that she's published. And basically it is, there's a blurb from the New York Times. One of the pleasures of reading Ms. Groff is her sheer unpredictability. She can inject her narrator's voice at any time, turn a sentence into a small hurricane. This is a book that's been recommended by Stephanie, our store manager. She's a huge fan of Lauren Groff's and pretty much reads everything. Stephanie is also an expert on short story collections written by women. She pretty much tries to read everything she can lay her hands on that fits into that category, which is fascinating.
Well, as someone who stays up way too late reading, I have come to a new appreciation for short stories because I can finish a story and go, okay, I'm done. Pick it up tomorrow.
Yeah,
so
I thought this was a fantastic collection of short stories. I mean, it's all about Florida. It's not the Florida of Carl Hiaasen.
It's not. Okay, because the description that I read sounded like this.
This is Florida that I read a quote somewhere, at Eden of Dangerous Things. It's all about danger. It's all about peril. There are abandoned children. There's a father who keeps reptiles in the house and keeps the mice to feed them in his son's closet. It's, you know, there's little girls
Yikes.
Lost.
It's That's pretty creepy, actually.
It's actually a very
time frame
vivid,
spans across centuries. It's not just contemporary.
It's a very vivid collection. Her prose is very, very fine.
Another one that was on both of your lists. I'll start with you, Michael, on this. The Book of Essie.
Ah, let me pull it out. Hang on just a second. Yeah, she's actually coming to the bookstore, the author of this. It's a debut novel, and she's actually coming to both of our stores, I think.
Oh,
right,
really?
Dan?
Wow.
Yeah, she's doing the Northern New England book tour.
Yeah. People tend to do that sometimes in the summer. Don't know why. It's just a pleasant place to be. Megan McLean Weir is the author of this book, and it's about a reality TV show. A young woman's grown up in the spotlight, and it's a show about kind of a fire and brimstone brand of religion, and she. Her mother, you know, spoiler alert, her mother discovers that she's pregnant, and then they have emergency meetings with the show's producers. One thing leads to another, yada, yada, yada. Book of essay.
You don't want to give too much away, but that's great.
I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, this is another book that Stephanie is recommending. And she writes, it's a totally entrancing story of a young woman who discovers she is pregnant. It's a problem because she's 17 and her large evangelical family are the stars of a wildly popular reality TV show. The plot of the book is propulsive and the characters in the book are larger than life. It's a great story with great writing.
Another one that was on both your lists, Dan, The Mars Room by Rachel Kushner. This is on a lot of summer reading lists, you know, by all these various groups that compile those lists.
Yeah, she wrote a book called The Flamethrowers, which was a critical favorite, and also it sold very well in independent bookstores. Mark is recommending this book, Mark DeCarteret, who's one of our booksellers. And he writes these recommendations that are almost like poetry, because he is a poet. More stark and unrestrained than her last undertaking, the accelerant-laced The Flamethrowers, The Mars Room still crackles and gives rise to a thoroughly realistic creation. So that's what Mark is saying about The Mars Room.
The interesting contrast between The Mars Room and Flamethrowers. Flamethrowers has just this broad canvas, you know, the West, Europe, you know, a woman, you know, art school student discovering radical politics in the 70s. The Mars Room is essentially, it's very claustrophobic. It's set in a fictional prison in California, and it's all gritty, and it's all, you know, it's not the California of the hippies and Haight-Ashbury and peace and love. It's the California of, you know, like seedy bars and broken glass.
I think I heard an interview on this, actually, on NPR at some point.
It's dark and gritty. It's got real flashes of humor, you know. So it's not a relentlessly dark read. It's very engaging.
Again, if you are not able to jot down the names of these books that we're talking about, no worries, because every book mentioned on our show today will be put later today on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And you can add your voice to our conversation right now. Tell us what you're reading, or if you need some advice on what to read this summer, of course, we've got that as well. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. A couple emails are coming in, gentlemen. Katie says, having already pre-ordered Dan Pfeiffer's Yes, We Still Can, have heard it's great, and frankly, if I can, just looking at the title every day might bring us a little hope in these dark and confusing times. So that's from Katie. Thank you, Katie. And here's Mike and Debbie, who sent us an email. Just finished Robin by Henry Holt, which, as a still mourning Robin Williams fan, I found, but not new, did enjoy reading about him and being reminded about some interesting events. Debbie also says, picking up today, The President is Missing by James Patterson and Bill Clinton. Interested to see what Dan and Michael have to say, if anything, about that one. Debbie says, independent bookstores rule. Love, Dan and Steph from Water Street. So there you go, Dan. I've seen this book everywhere. The President is Missing. Yeah. So what can you tell us about it, Michael?
The President is Missing, and it's a problem. That's what I can tell you. I haven't read it. I'll tell you.
It just came out.
It's a huge thriller, bestseller. You know, it's got tremendous brand names on it. Sometimes what people are looking for in the summer is you know, something that they're familiar with, but it's new at the same time. It's a brand name phenomenon.
Yeah, I mean, Newt Gingrich has done this with a co-writer as well, not as famous as James Patterson. James Patterson is a giant in our industry. He's created basically his own line of books, and he authors some of them, and then he co-authors and works with other authors. In this case, he's chosen a co-author who is a former president, in President Bill Clinton.
I'm looking forward to reading this. The more I look at it, the more I say, boy, I wonder what the heck is that? I really have to pick that up and see what's going on there. James Patterson and Bill Clinton. I have to say about Patterson too, he's been a tremendous supporter of the independent bookstore community.
And the independent and libraries
and
as well.
Libraries as well. Yeah.
Well, while we're talking about James Patterson, I'd love to ask you, Dan, about the power of a brand like James Patterson. There's just this enduring appeal of best-selling novelists. You know, the people whose books you always right. find in any bookstore, including the one at the airport, which is pretty small, so shelf space is at a premium. You know, James Patterson, Tom Clancy, Danielle Steele, Nora Roberts, a couple others. I would put Stephen King in that category. You guys have told me no. But what's the power of that brand, and what's their secret? How do these people keep churning it out and being so successful at it?
I think their secret is they're very intentional about creating their brand and preserving it. They deliver on their formula each time. Their readers are dependent on that delivery of that formula. They want that familiarity. They want to know that in this space, this is where the arc of the story is going to go. This is how the characters are going to react.
And they know they'll like it.
And that's wonderful. I mean, there's always been writers that have, you know, since the rise of mass culture and brands, there have always been writers that have done this. Stephen King is a little different in that he is a brand as well, but his brand is that he's kind of the Charles Dickens of America. He's written ghost stories, he's written horror stories, and then he's written these amazing, I would call them love stories. We were talking about the book 112263. Yeah. It's my hands down all-time favorite Stephen King book. It's a story about a guy who's time traveling through a cold storage area in the back of a diner in Maine, and it takes him to 1959, and he's trying to stop Oswald from killing President Kennedy. And he falls in love with a woman in Texas on the way.
As one does, of course.
It's just
it could happen to anybody in the back of a cold storage place in Maine.
It's just the quirkiest, most amazing book. And I love Stephen King.
Actually, for summer reading, if you haven't read it yet, it's new to you.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the secret. That's why we have older titles in our stores, because it's new to somebody.
So to loop back, Stephen King is definitely a brand, but he is a protean brand. It is like all of life packed into that brand.
Whereas
some of these other brands they're much more formulaic, and that's not a critique. That is a strength in that they're delivering a familiar story to the folks that want that.
Well, if you're going to spend precious free time reading something, you want to enjoy it. Yeah,
well,
go ahead, Michael.
Also, you can kind of, illustrate the point here about brands and authors indirectly. I mean, Anthony Bourdain, who passed away recently, unfortunately, came to the defense of a woman in the Midwest who had written a glowing review of an Olive Garden that had opened up in her town. And people were making fun of her all up and down the internet. And Bourdain said, hey, wait a minute. First of all, this might be the best restaurant in the town that she's living in. And second of all, people appreciate what she's writing. They're looking for the same experience every time. They're looking to get out to something familiar and that's good at the same time. So what's the problem here? And the same thing is true of genre or sort of brand name fiction. It's like, you know what you're going to get. They deliver on it. You get it. You have fun with it. What's the matter with it? There's nothing wrong with it.
Again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email with your favorite books for the summer or your requests for advice on what to read. Again, you can send us an email at exchange@nhpr.org. Just a reminder also that we're not talking about books for teens and kids today because we're going to be talking about that in early July. So you can send us your questions now on that and we'll use them for that forthcoming show on young adult reading and kids reading. You can send us your emails right now, exchange@nhpr.org. Lots of emails coming in, gentlemen. Here's one from Carolyn in Ware, who says, our book group holds an end-of-the-year potluck in June and always chooses a book that supports a particular food theme. This year we chose Elena Ferrante's My Brilliant Friend, which is currently being filmed as a miniseries by HBO. Our bookstore, as Carolyn says, finding renewed or sustained interest in the Neapolitan series. Carolyn, thank you for the email. Dan, I did want to ask you, you can also respond to her direct question. I wanted to ask about book clubs, too. I mean, are they enduring? Are people still joining them? Is it kind of an older person thing? Younger people aren't really that interested.
Right. Book clubs are an enduring phenomena. They are part of independent bookstores' mission of building a diverse and vibrant community around the written word, which is Water Street Bookstore's mission. It tends to be something that people start to do as they settle into the broader kind of arc of their life in their 30s. People in their 20s, they're trying to figure out a lot of stuff, and they probably don't have the social connections or the time as they're starting their careers to really belong to a book club.
But they're out clubbing, but they're not book clubbing.
Exactly. Well, with exceptions.
Yeah, well.
But to say that there's a generation that is like leaving book clubs behind, I don't think that's right. I think there's a time in your life.
It's kind of like buying a house. You come to it when you're ready for it.
100% right.
Book clubs tend to be somewhat of a neighborhood phenomena. Friends in a neighborhood will get together, on a monthly basis to share a book and some great wine and some great food.
People are so isolated now. And, the internet was supposed to bring everybody together, but we're all just living in our own little bubbles. And book clubs are a way to pierce the bubble and get out and be with your community.
That's exactly right. It's a way to not bowl alone,
exactly.
To steal the famous title.
Yes. Well, and Carolyn also asks about, she mentions Elena Ferrante's My Brilliant Friend being filmed as a miniseries by HBO. She asks you guys about sustained interest in the Neapolitan series. Any thoughts on that, Michael, either the Neapolitan series or the idea that some books are being picked up by, not just movies, but HBO, Netflix, and so forth?
Well, it's a golden age, really, in a way, because instead of trying to encapsulate a broad canvas novel into a two-hour movie, now they have the option of these streaming services and these multi-part ways of addressing the material. And
Big
the,
Little Lies was a series, a TV series, yeah.
Yep. And, I think that Ferrante is a marvelous writer. She's one of the best writers. These books continue to move very briskly in the store, not as much as they did maybe a year or two ago. But I think there will be renewed interest now, yeah.
Go ahead, Dan.
Just to reiterate what Michael said about the ways in which the new streaming services and the long form of art of television is creating sales of books in bookstores. That's absolutely the case.
Well, a couple more emails. Here's Nancy in Putney, Vermont. In our Southern Vermont bookstore, Everyone's Books, we all love Marlborough, Vermont author Robin MacArthur's Heartspring Mountain, about an extended family's time after Tropical Storm Irene, as well as history and the effects of substance abuse on a family. And boy, Hurricane Irene hit Vermont a lot harder than New Hampshire, so I appreciate that. We should talk about local authors a little bit, gentlemen. Dan, do you want to kick that off?
Sure. There's actually a few authors that have books coming out this fall. Do you want to save that for that part of the...
You're in charge. As long as they're local authors, that's great.
We have two books that are coming out actually in August. That one is by a gentleman who lives in Lee, New Hampshire, Keith O'Brien.
So very local for you.
Right.
Yeah.
He's written a book called Fly Girls, How Five Daring Women Defied All Odds and Made Aviation History. So not just Amelia Earhart, but her sister pilots. And then...
Coming off of the success of Hidden Figures.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
very,
the woman at
very
NASA.
Much. Yeah. Speaking of sort of a formula. But that's a wonderful book. I've read it, and we're very much looking forward to working with Keith to find the Seacoast audience for that book. Another book that's coming out this fall that's hyper local is Victoria Arlen, is a resident of Exeter, and she also was the Paralympian who won gold medals in 2012 in the London Paralympics. But she's written a book called Locked In, which is subtitled The Will to Survive and the Resolve to Live. She's also been a media sensation on both ESPN as an announcer, and now she was on the fall season of Dancing with the Stars.
Wow.
And, to go from being a paraplegic to competing on Dancing with the Stars is quite a story. So we're looking forward to selling Victoria's book as well.
Okay, so we'll talk about a couple more local authors after a short break, because I know you have one or two more, Michael. And Dan, you've got some local poets, I think, that you want to highlight. Also, a lot more of your emails, including an email that just came in. I'll wait until after the break, that recommends one of the books that I read this year, which is absolutely my favorite, almost, I think, maybe ever. So she recommends that as well. So that's coming up. Plus, more of your emails, exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what to read this summer. We're getting our guests' recommendations and those of you, our listeners. Also, any book mentioned on the show today will be on our website later today, nhpr.org/exchange. So you can join us now with your thoughts, questions, comments, your favorites, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And guys, just before the break, we were talking about local authors, and there's a ton. There's a ton. And Michael, I wonder if you had any more that you wanted to add to the list.
Well, I was hoping to have this book to bring with me today, but it's not quite in the store yet. I know it's printed because I saw a picture on Facebook. Dan Cesney has written a book called The White Mountain. It's all about Mount Washington, and it's about not only its status as a box that you check if you're a climber. It's about the cultural history, what it means to both to New Hampshire and to everyone really, about exploration, discovery, and just all the different stories about it. We're really looking forward to getting this book into the store.
Well, and he's going to be on our show, I believe, June 26th. So we're excited about that as
good,
well.
Good.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I'll take it from the whites to the seacoast. Another local author for Water Street Bookstore is David W. Moore's Small Town, Big Oil. And this is the story of Dudley Dudley and her cohorts as they fought one of the richest men in the world in the 1970s, Aristotle Onassis, who basically wanted to turn the Isles of Shoals and the Great Bay into a large oil refinery operation. And through community action and organizing, they stopped him cold and preserved the seacoast to look the way it does now, which is to a large degree small towns with wild places in between. It's an amazing story. And speaking of media, I think this has been optioned by Jennifer Lawrence. I think she wants to play Dudley Dudley.
It can't
really
miss. I mean,
wow.
These guys, they can't believe they got beat, but they got beat.
Well, and that is, we talked earlier about, you know, that stack by your bedside. That's on my stack. Apologies,
stack?
I have not cracked it open yet. But people who are new to New Hampshire or younger people, when I tell them that story, you know, that they just can't believe that,
right.
A, that was proposed, and B, that these, you know, this small group of women politicians beat Aristotle Onassis.
We all know the seacoast as it is today, which is this kind of gorgeous spot in New Hampshire, amongst many gorgeous spots like the White Mountains and like the central part of the state. But it could have been an entirely different landscape. If it had turned into an oil refinery.
Everything would be different today. Everything what we feel about New Hampshire would be different today.
That's right.
Well, here's an email from Polly, who has another local author she wants to recommend. She says, I just read Raven Tell a Story by Anne Donaghy. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. From Meriden, New Hampshire. Polly says, it was a great read and a page turner. So, Polly, thank you for that one. And a couple more recommendations coming in from our listeners. Two books I recently enjoyed, says Nancy in Durham. How Democracies Die by Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt gives the reader a historical and global perspective on our modern politics. And then, Nancy, thank you so much for this second recommendation. A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles reminds you of the charm of civility. That was, hands down, not just one of my favorite books this year, but one of my favorite books ever.
Oh, my gosh.
Every sentence is just beautifully crafted. It's not just the story, it's the writing. So I just can't say enough about that book. I told everybody that they needed to read it, even though you have to wait, you know, you have to wait to get it sometimes. If you want to get to the library, you're going to have to wait.
So. You know, it's so important to have an all-time favorite book. It really is. Umberto Eco's Name of the Rose is my all-time favorite book.
Oh, man, I wasn't ready for this question.
But you know, and some people say, well, I can't choose one.
But
if you do have an all-time favorite book, that is an amazing thing.
I am ready for that question. Lolita.
There you go.
Yeah. Here's another email from Richard in Chester, who says, what is wrong with me that I can only read nonfiction? That's interesting, Richard. I'm the opposite. I can only read fiction. To know that the events portrayed in a book really happened engages me so much more than fiction that I can barely stand to open a fictional book. Richard says, to that point, although not brand new, two recent favorites, both about strong world leaders. River of Doubt, about Teddy Roosevelt's adventure into the Amazon River Basin late in his life, and Hero of the Empire, concerning Winston Churchill's ventures during the Boer War early in his career. Richard, thank you so much. It's interesting, too, those books, because they are about periods of history for those men that are less well known. The other thing, though, that I wanted to ask both of you guys about, he says, not brand new, but two recent favorites. So summer is a time to not just pick up a new author, but also, Michael, to pick up something you always meant to read. You know, maybe it's 100 years old, maybe it's 2 years old, but something that you always meant to get to.
It's nice to have a dream. And, so, you know, summer encourages that. So you say, well, you know, I'm going to get to that book. I am this time, you know. And sometimes you don't. Sometimes you do. I mean, this summer for me, it's Middlemarch. I'm finally going to read Middlemarch.
Okay, so you're going to have to remind me what the appeal
George Eliot.
Is. Okay.
It's yeah. a huge masterpiece from the 19th century that every English major has read, and I've never read it.
Okay.
And I'm ashamed to admit it on the air. This summer, I'm going to get to it.
There's no shame. There's too many books. My habit in the summer is to go back and read one book from my past life that I absolutely love. Last year, it was Ivan Doig's This House of Sky. This summer, I am determined to reread a book that I read in Father Kennedy's theology class back in at the College of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. It's a book by Lewis Hyde called The Gift, Creativity and the Artist in the Modern World. This book set my 20-year-old brain on fire.
See what it does to your brain now.
I can't wait to read it again this summer. And so much of the work we do in the bookstore is surrounding creativity and artists and in community. And I think this book is going to give me some great ideas.
Have you read it since you were 20?
No.
Oh, boy. Okay.
No.
I really want to know how it holds up. I'm afraid to read some books I loved when I was that age because I'm just afraid they're not going
to
hold up.
See, I love to read them because I remember what it was like to read it when I was younger, and then to compare the reading experience now that I'm 59 is it's amazing.
It's going to give you a window into your younger self.
Exactly. It's like time travel, but it's also
personal
like
11, time travel.
Exactly. 63, except without assassinations and such.
There you go. So anyway, that's my summer habit is to go back and read one book that I loved from my past.
Oh, that's a great idea. Well, Richard, thank you very much for that email. And so Richard's not a fan of fiction, and that's okay, Richard, because we've got lots of nonfiction choices.
Absolutely. You're just built that way. That's your DNA.
Right.
And that is wonderful. We need nonfiction readers.
Yep.
Another category in fiction, though, that I did want to ask you guys about is, is it really fiction? Poetry. I mean, it's not nonfiction. It's not really fiction. And Dan, I know you've got a lot to say about poetry this year. By the way, there's something in the water in New Hampshire because we really seem to just grow poets organically in this state. I'm not really sure why. But go ahead, Dan.
It's in the granite, actually. Yes. So first of all, full disclosure, Mark DeCarteret is one of my all-time favorite booksellers that's ever worked for me. But he's also a former City of Portsmouth poet laureate. And he has a new book of poems coming, his first in, I think, almost 10 years. And it's called For Lack of a Calling. And it's coming out in July. And we are going to push this book like crazy because we love Mark DeCarteret, our bookseller. Mark is also recommending Frank Beidart's Half Light, which won the Pulitzer Prize this year. He says that this is a book that is closer to clear thought than poetry. Its sole trope is consciousness toughening up as it collides with the page. And then finally, we have three local poets. Jessica Purdy is a local resident of Exeter. She's published a book this year called Starland. Jeff Friedman has Floating Tales, a book of poems. And Matt Miller, who is in the English faculty at Phillips Exeter Academy, has a brilliant new book of poems called The Wounded for the Water. So that's my poetry.
Boy, the titles in and of themselves are poetic.
That's a lot of poetry.
But I think it's in the granite.
Yeah.
It's poetry and radon. You know, it's in the granite.
There you go.
That's New Hampshire's legacy. I was fascinated to meet Juan Felipe Herrera at an event down at the Courier a couple of months ago. He visited to read his poetry. He's the son of migrant farm workers, and he became the U.S. Poet Laureate, and he just stepped down from that post last year. And he's a fascinating storyteller, and he writes for both kids and adults. So I would encourage people to discover his work if they haven't already.
All right. Well, again, if you missed some of those titles that Dan mentioned, if you're a poetry lover and you didn't get a chance to write those down, no worries, because any book mentioned today will be on our website. A little bit later, when we get the list together, it's nhpr.org/exchange. More emails, people really wanting to share their favorites with you guys. So this is great. Thanks to everybody. Jackie says, I'm a 26-year-old in Dover, moved to the Seacoast from Boston with my now fiancé when I was 23. I didn't have any friends in the area, so I joined a book club, and it has been running for several years. I've made a good group of friends thanks to our book club, and my brilliant friend is the next book we're reading. Book clubs, Jackie says, are a great way to meet people when you're new to the area, and I've told friends in other places in the country to join one when they move somewhere to meet some great new people. So, Jackie, that's great. And it gets back to our earlier conversation about, you know, our book club's a generational thing, and Jackie's saying, nope, good idea, no matter how young or old you are. Here's another suggestion from Bethany. She says, I recommend James Rebank's book, A Shepherd's Life, about his book as a sheep farmer in the Lakes District of England. Not only is it a great read in the James Herriot vein, the real strength is how he takes pride and ownership in being native to and working a beautiful landscape that others only visit. For New Hampshire, our dependence on yet often rocky relationship with what a tourist economy means for local community and pride, this is a bolstering read, Bethany says. And speaking of books we read when we were kids, I read the whole James Herriot series when I was, you know, 11, 12, and so forth. So,
speaking of the power of the brand, James Herriot had an incredible brand. The Rebank book that she just mentioned is, that is the first time I've ever heard anyone talk about that book. That book sells very steadily and quietly.
Really?
So thank you for bringing that
kind
up.
Of like the character in the book, it sounds like.
Exactly.
Steady and quiet. Well, thank you so much for that, Bethany. Here's one from Jan. I've just finished a delightful new book by Alexander McCall Smith, The Good Pilot, Peter Woodhouse. This one is a standalone novel rather than part of his many series, e.g. the number one ladies detective agency. Poignant story of wartime, written with McCall Smith's great gentle insight into human nature. Booksellers, this one should really sell well. Jan, thank you for that one. Familiar with this one, guys?
McCall
Smith, he's written like, 150 books or something.
Oh, wow, all, really?
Yeah, he's very reliable. Talk about a brand name.
Very
good storyteller.
I've heard of that, the number one ladies detective agency. Yeah. I've heard it. So that's the brand.
That's the first one.
And it sounds like he's kind of just...
That's one of his many series.
Yeah. It sounds like he kind of took a side detour with this other book.
He's taken nothing but detours, and they all pay off.
Well, thank you again for that one, Jan. Again, you can send us an email with your ideas, thoughts, and questions. exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Or you can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You know, summer often, people, especially like our earlier emailer who doesn't like fiction, Michael, sometimes people want to dive into a memoir, so sort of a thoughtful reflection by a famous person. You talked about David Sedaris earlier, known as a humorist, but his book is kind of a memoir.
Yeah.
John McCain has a memoir, The Restless Wave.
Written with Mark Salter.
Who is always his co-writer, former political aide.
Okay.
So they really have a partnership.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't had a chance to read it yet. It's been very popular at the bookstore.
I bet.
Yeah.
I think this book is intended as a summation of Senator McCain's career. And so very elegiac, and Salter and McCain together write beautifully. And it's a great read, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
Well, got an email from Chris in Ware who says, just finished Whiskey and Ribbons by Lisa Cross Smith. Poets and Writers Magazine called it a quiet novel. In that it's not full of thrills. However, it's written in the voices of three main characters, exposing the backstory in increments that held my interest. There's an unexpected plot turn that gives the novel substance. So Whiskey and Ribbons is another one recommended by our emailer. Before I ask you guys what you're excited about for fall, anything else that you really want to make sure that listeners know about before we close out today?
We haven't discussed our favorite novels yet.
So, Michael,
I got to discuss my favorite novel.
Okay, other than Florida, which is short stories, probably the best fiction of the season, there's a couple. One is There, There by Tommy Orange. It's a
debut
novel.
Oh, yes, I've heard a lot about that. Right.
Yeah, it's a novel about urban Indians. It's not out on the plains or anything like that. It's set in Oakland, California. It's beautifully written. It's an astonishing debut.
That has gotten that's
by
on
Margaret
many many
Atwood
lists.
And Louise Erdrich.
Wow.
And this was the number one recommendation from independent booksellers.
There by Tommy Orange.
On the
right,
list.
It's a biggie.
Right.
I'm going to pitch in with a follow up by Madeline Miller, who wrote a beautiful reinterpretation of the Achilles story from Homer. It was called The Song of Achilles. She has a new book about the witch, Circe, which both Alice and Jill they're just handing it out in the store. It's flying
really?
Out of the store.
Yep.
They recommend it as a quiet and introspective interpretation of the witch Circe from Greek myth. So that's one that I definitely wanted to mention. But then we have this book by Michael Ondaatje, who wrote The English Patient and is just one of the great writers of our time.
We predict that Laura Kanoi will like it because it's, what do you read after Gentleman in Moscow?
Right.
Yeah. And All the Light We Cannot See,
and All the Light,
which was another huge favorite.
This is the third one. So this is Michael Ondaatje's War Light. And it is this amazing kind of study of this young man who is trying to understand what his mother's role was in his life. And who she was that he didn't know. It's the most beautiful book. It takes place mostly in the time after World War II, in the late 40s and 50s.
Oh, sure.
And
Europe was a mess after the
war.
It was a very difficult time.
This woman worked as an intelligence, it's his mother, but she was this person that worked in intelligence.
No
she
spoilers. Kind of got no spoilers.
but it's just, he's trying to figure out who she was. And
who she was fascinating.
Yes, exactly. And Michael Ondaatje's writing is so beautifully, and this is going to sound strange, but it's murky. It's like this book is, the light is in the title, but this young man, the main character, is struggling to see light.
Of course, war light is very dim because everything's darked out so they don't get bombed.
It's just so beautiful.
Oh, I see. Sure, war light, because the electrical systems were still down after the war.
We are over time, but this is the book that I would love to see everyone read.
Okay, so War Light. That's the one you want to see everybody read. And again, All the Light We Cannot See is sort of at a similar time period, Europe and so forth.
Yeah.
And that was a big one a year or two ago. And I love that
big.
One this year.
Still big. Yeah.
Fantastic book. Michael, anything else that you just absolutely want to make sure that we know about?
Great adventure story talking about Florida where the environment is beautiful and also wants to kill you. Bearskin by James McLaughlin.
Yes, I've seen that mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fascinating debut novel set in Virginia. Guy's on the run from the cartels and he finds himself in charge of a section of wilderness and somehow all the bears are getting killed. It's beautifully written debut. It's like Dashiell Hammett, Sam Spade in the wilderness almost. I really loved it.
Yeah, I saw that one mentioned on a lot of lists, so we'll pick that one up as well.
Sure.
Promise to read those two books that you guys mentioned before the next time we get together on the show in December for our Best Books of 2018. Have a great summer. Thank you so much for being here. It was really fun to talk to you. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you so much, Laura.
That's Dan Chartrand, owner of Water Street Bookstore in Exeter. Michael, great to see you. Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Michael Herman, owner of Gibson's Bookstore in Concord. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.